Hey, Scott Spears here live at the Marion County Fair on this Getaway Friday, July the 8th, 2022, 18 minutes past the hour. And we'll be broadcasting here at least the next 2 hours, possibly the next three, from the Marion County Fair. 172nd edition, Veterans Day here this morning at the Marion County Fair. Hope you can hear us well wherever we are. As I said this morning in our first hour during the morning show, if for some reason this ends up not sounding as great as we hope it to, we are recording here at the fair hard copies of this, and we will get those on the website and available to the public as soon as possible. We have got a great guest this morning here to kick off the morning. He has never been on with us before, but he is here at the Marion County Fair today. He is hypnotist Mike Bishop. Mike, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, Scott. What a beautiful day to be at the fair. Son of a gun, we're getting a little bit of rain out here, but we've got a couple more days yet, and boy, you want to come out here. This is a beautiful fairground.
Now, what is your schedule like today here at the fair?
Today, I'm performing shows at 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and 9 o'clock. I'm going to be over in a new stage area that they're just starting to develop. It's the Picnic Pavilion. Really nice covered place. Even if it's raining a little bit, come in there, grab some of that great fair food, come in and watch the show. Like I said, 5 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and 9 o'clock. So, yeah.
Now, how did you get started as a hypnotist?
Yeah, I started off doing hypnosis shows. I started off as actually doing magic shows when I was 8 years old. By the time I was 12, I realized I could make money, so I started doing shows for money. At 16, I saw a hypnotist in my high school, and I thought it was really awesome, and I went and talked to him, and the next thing I know, he and I are conversing, and he's sharing this stuff with me that I need to do. And since that time, I've worked everywhere doing shows.
Now, we all think we know what hypnosis is or have an idea. Well, how would you define hypnosis?
Hypnosis is simply a state of mind that you enter and exit into on a pretty regular basis. Every time you fall asleep, you go through that state of mind. It's called the alpha brainwave state. The difference is that under hypnosis, the hypnotist helps you stay in that state, which makes you very, very creative, very, very relaxed. You feel really good. And frankly, you just don't care about a lot of stuff. I mean, it's just a really, really nice place to be. And the relaxation is very, very deep. It's much deeper than if you're sleeping.
Now, how do you become a hypnotist without giving away all the tricks of the trade?
Well, there really aren't any tricks of the trade. The difference between magic and hypnosis is huge because hypnosis is a natural state of mind. One of the things I tell people is if you want to learn how to be a hypnotist, that's fantastic. It's not too hard to do. If you want to learn how to be a stage hypnotist, on the other hand, that's tricky. You need to spend quite a bit of time just hypnotizing large groups of people and dealing with all kinds of different atmospheric issues and things like that. Like last night, we were doing one of the shows and the tractor pulls were going on. It's hard to concentrate when you hear with the revving engine of a tractor. But those kinds of things, it's just really a lot of practice. You can go online and find all kinds of coursework on how to hypnotize someone, especially if you want to hypnotize yourself for smoking or other issues like that.
No, that's an interesting question because the smoking thing, you see a lot of that, or you were seeing quite a bit of that a few years ago. Is that just mind over matter, suggestion, placebo, or is there really something to the hypnosis?
Well, the thing about this, when you talk about the concept of mind over matter, your unconscious mind does probably 1,000 things a second for you. And one of the many things that it does is it interprets what's painful and what's not painful. So if it says that it's painful not to have a cigarette, then you won't have a cigarette, If it says, So the key thing is that all those impulses, they're not interpreted the same way that we think they are. We think that our unconscious mind is logical, and it's not. It's a feeling part of our brain, and it's a dominating part of our brain. Our unconscious mind develops from the time we're born, but our critical faculty doesn't finish developing until we're in our late 20s. So all this time, we're trying to use logic to force ourselves to feel a different way. We're talking to the wrong part of the brain. And in hypnosis, that's what I do. I talk to that part of the brain. So yes, I can help you reinterpret what you used to perceive as pleasurable, what you know logically is not. And that's pretty much the secret to any kind of therapy that works with hypnosis.
Now, why does it work for some people and not work for others? You know, some will quit, some will not quit smoking when they go to those things.
And it comes back to exactly what I just said. Some people go because they're just trying one more thing, but they use the word try instead of do. If you're going to do it, then you got to go do it. If you say, well, I'll try, you're really not committing. You're not really in a situation where you're going to let that happen. So your unconscious mind knows that. It feels that, and it just isn't going to, it's not going to cooperate you really, that's where mind over matter comes from. It's your own mind and how your own mind interprets the way you're actually reacting. I tell people all the time, if you want to learn how to relax, it's simple. Relax your finger. If you can relax your finger, let your mind see that relaxation, pretty soon you notice your whole body starts to relax. It's really as simple as that.
Why do you think, I mean, aside from being so busy and being so connected now, that we are much more nervous, much more anxiety-ridden in 2020 than probably we were in 1980?
Oh, I don't think there's any doubt about that. I think that for one thing, and it's a tragedy, but I don't think there's anything we could do about it. We were all wearing masks and we weren't connecting with strangers because we were afraid of strangers. We were afraid of the virus that they may or may not have been carrying. And anytime you have that kind of fear and it's reinforced day after day after day, again, that's something that enters into the unconscious mind. And it takes us a while to really learn to reconnect with one another and not be afraid that someone who is, I remember I was in a restaurant and a guy started coughing in the restaurant, and several people in the restaurant got uncomfortable because they were afraid maybe he had COVID and he was going to be giving it to them. I think that that's just something that we have to kind of work through over the next couple of years. But yeah, I mean, we definitely are experiencing a kind of a form of trauma.
How has the pandemic changed somebody who performs in front of big groups of people and who needs people in his performance to do it?
Well, I give the example. 3 years ago, I had 160 shows booked and I did five. The following year, I had 140 shows booked and I did 160. Literally, as soon as we started being able to perform again, we were out performing again. And again, this year, I've got quite a few shows, but I noticed that in my audiences, there's a real desire for people to have fun, and I don't blame them. We deserve to have fun. We've done an awful lot as a group of people to stop a virus, or at least to do a really good job of bringing it down to a more manageable state, and we all did that together. And I think a lot of times we have to be proud of that. And when you see an audience, they want to have fun. I'm like, yeah, I want you to have fun too. You deserve it. We all deserve it.
Are there people who cannot be hypnotized?
The only people that can't be hypnotized, and the problem with that is it's a little confusing, because when someone watches a show, I have to hypnotize people to a really, really high level of suggestibility. So some of those people aren't going to go under deep enough for me to actually be able to do a demonstration with them. Other than that, you have people that, for instance, they have mental disabilities and they can't do it because they can't concentrate. Concentration is a very big deal. But for people that want to do things like quit smoking and things like that, a very low level of hypnosis is all that's necessary. Not like in a show, whereas in a show you'll see me sometimes thank somebody for giving it a try. They were hypnotized, but they weren't hypnotized deep enough to actually demonstrate, you know, how it works.
Now, what is a typical show like?
Well, at the beginning of the show, and everybody always says, well, can you make that shorter? And I know I can't. The beginning of the show, you've got to get people to understand what it is that they're going to do and what they're not going to do. You want people to trust you. Once you get through that and you show them a few exercises, show them how the unconscious mind works, you know, that kind of thing, then I invite people up, and then I do what's called the induction, which actually was what puts people to sleep. That's about the time people really start to pay attention. They're watching, and they're noticing their next-door neighbor or their friend or their, you know, family member, and all of a sudden their head is drooping, and they drop off to the side. I've had people slide onto the floor. I've had people laying their head on each other's shoulders. Once those people are hypnotized, then we start a few demonstrations. I do things like, it's getting really hot in here, it's getting really cold in here, things that aren't actually happening, but they're happening in your mind, and if they happen in your mind, they're real. Later on, people won't be able to remember their name, they won't be able to count correctly, they won't be able to tie their shoe, they'll see something that's not there, they'll hear something that isn't really happening, and each one of those things is really designed so it's funny. So that, you know, that's the comedy of hypnotist, and that's the whole point, is that I want people to see that and be, you know, really impressed by it, but at the same time, I want them to laugh, I want them to have a good time. So.
Being a comedy hypnotist, a humorous hypnotist, how did that develop, that style?
Well, that's really the way it all started for me. The hypnotherapy and all that kind of stuff, I just did that because I wanted to really more understand the brain state. So for me, it was always about doing the shows that were funny. I was a comedy magician, and I wanted to become a comedy hypnotist. I love the sound of laughter, and for me, one of my unconscious signals is laughter. when I hear people laughing, it makes me happy.
Now, where have you performed at? Some of the big city, state buildings?
Wow. I've performed in Las Vegas several times. I've performed in several resorts, Palm Beach, West Palm, Palm Springs, a lot of palms in there. I performed in a couple of nightclubs in Hollywood. An interesting note, I was supposed to do a, what was it, a comedy club? No, it was a nightclub in New Orleans, and they called me and said, don't come, there's a hurricane coming. The nightclub was on an island, and it was when the hurricane came through, and the nightclub was gone because the island was gone. And I literally... They said, don't come. 3 days later, it would have been like 2 days later, I would have been right in the middle of that hurricane. So, yeah, I've worked just about every venue. I've never done cruise ships, but that's by choice. I've headlined in a lot of different casinos, a lot of Indian casinos out west and, you know, that kind of thing. So, yeah, just a lot of places.
Why no cruise ships?
I just don't want to. Cruise ships are, all this is agent-driven. So if I get an agent, that agent is going to work me in a certain market. And I just didn't want to expand that any further. In fact, I started to not like the especially Las Vegas, but the casinos that were pushing for R-rated and X-rated material. I didn't want to do that. And so I backed off of that, and I started coming back here and doing shows at fairs. When I was a kid, my first job, when I was 5 years old, I worked at a fair. You know, I love the fairs. I love the environment. I love the people. I love seeing children sitting in the front row and laughing and watching and you know, kind of, oh, my gosh, look at that kind of thing. Much prefer that.
Are different parts of the country receptive in different ways to your show?
You know, honestly, I've never seen that to be true. It really, when I go into an environment, whatever the environment is, it really is that group, you know, that collective of that group that determines whether or not they're going to be receptive or not. Generally speaking, affairs can be hard because of the environment, but the people are awesome. Other places, like if you go into corporate environments, if that corporation is experiencing some problem, they're going to be tough to hypnotize because they're worried about all those other things that are going on. So, but I do a lot of high schools, I do a lot of colleges, and those, you know, again, never really an issue. And anywhere I've traveled, I've never noticed the geography played much of a part.
You know, I've heard from comedians, you know, big name comedians who have said if the audience has more money, if it's a richer neighborhood, a richer community, that they don't laugh as easy. Now, it's not that they're not enjoying the show as much, they're just not as demonstrative as maybe another crowd would be.
You know, honestly, that's a question that I don't honestly feel that's the case, but the difference is that's a comedian, and the comedian is working certain material that he knows is successful material. If you go with a group of people that are not part of that material, it's not going to be as funny to them. It's like telling a farmer joke to a bunch of corporate executives. Most of them aren't going to understand the joke because they're corporate executives. And I think that when a guy develops material, that material has to be reflective of what it is that's going to make those people laugh. And I also think, too, there's more stress when you're talking about people that are in, that do have more money, because there's usually their jobs are more stressful. So they, you know, it's like the old saying, the richest guy in the hospital is the surgeon. He's also the one who goes to bed every night at the same time and gets up every morning at the same time. He has the toughest life. So he should be getting paid more money than anybody else is, you know. And I think that's definitely true. When I see people in corporate environments, they are definitely the most stressed of the environment. They just have to be.
So is this really all one country in the end? Everything is pretty much the same no matter where you go?
No, definitely not. When one thing we're talking about hypnosis, but another thing we're talking about, yeah, there are airports that I fly into that I swear I'm not going to ever use that airport again. There's some places where they're just, it's much more difficult to work. And part of it, too, might be service people, you know, in other words, how they're treated and how they feel like they're being treated. But, there's just... As I travel around the country, yes, there are definitely differences. One of the things I know for sure, though, is that almost everybody in this country cares that this country gets better. And, you know, whatever that means, it's just that we all have a different interpretation of how we're going to get there. But, as far as the entertainment and that, people that walk into my show, if they know there's going to be a hypnotist there, they're at least receptive to the idea of being hypnotized.
Are there people who are not receptive, just in general, to even seeing a hypnotist?
Yeah, there are some people that of the mistaken notion that I'm using some kind of power, and this has nothing to do with power. It has to do with knowledge. I guess, you know, when you say knowledge is power, then yeah, I guess there is a power, but I don't possess any ability to make people go under other than just my knowledge of what it is that works and my many, many years of experience observing how people will respond and doing what I need to do to help them go under.
What's your most memorable moment on stage? What sticks out in your mind?
I was doing a show at a casino in Oklahoma. Yeah, it was in Oklahoma. And there was long casino shows, like they last like an hour and a half. And this woman raised her hand and said she had to go to the bathroom. Well, and anytime someone leaves to go to the bathroom, I always give them the same instruction. And again, this is part of a comedy show. So I said, after you're done using the bathroom, before you return, you'll gather everything in the bathroom that's not nailed down, and you bring it back to me and present it to me as a gift. So I usually get boxes of Kleenex, maybe a couple extra toilet paper rolls, things like that. And they bring it in and they give it to me. And it's a really funny moment in the audience. This particular woman I didn't know was the hospitality manager for the hotel. So she had the keys and went into every bathroom and removed everything. She brought the cologne in the men's room, the perfume in the women's room, every paper product that you can imagine in garbage bags. And she drug these three huge garbage bags into the thing and yelled to me, "Look what I got you!" It was really funny. Unfortunately, six bathrooms on the casino floor had no toilet paper.
It was pretty funny, yeah. Now, what is the moment that sticks out? I never want to live that moment again.
Several years ago now, there was a guy on my stage. And when he came up on stage, he was fine. And then I realized that there was something going wrong. I stopped the show, and I said, "Are there any medical people here?" And there were a couple nurses there. And I said, "I think he's having a heart attack." And a heart attack is not related to hypnosis. It was just his time. He was having a heart attack. I'm glad that I was there and noticed it, because if he had continued just with his head off to the side, I might not have noticed, and it might have gotten really worse. But the women came up, and almost immediately they made a phone call. There was a doctor on the fairgrounds, and the doctor came in. They got the guy bundled up, and he was fine. He actually came back to the fair a couple days later and thanked me, but it was horrific. It was really frightening, you know.
Is there any kind of health hazard to this?
No. But the only health hazard is if you relax too deeply and you slide out of your chair, you could bump your head or something. But I watch out for stuff like that. There's no health hazard.
What is it you want people to leave your show knowing or taking away?
Well, the thing about hypnosis is, and I do a thing at the end of every show where everyone who is on stage is given a suggestion that they can go home and they can use to go to sleep instantly. And a lot of people don't think they can do things like that readily. I don't want them to take away, yes, your unconscious mind is very powerful. This is a tool that every one of us has. Anybody that wants to can tap into that tool, and they can improve aspects of their life that they don't like. When they leave there, and one of the things I mention in a lot of my shows is, I was doing a show in Chicago a couple of years ago, and the last suggestion I give is, tonight when it's time for you to fall asleep, all you have to do is sit down or lie down, and you say these words, taking a couple deep breaths, and you fall asleep. So I get a phone call from this guy that was on my stage in Chicago. And he says, "Hey, I slept last night." And I said, "Oh, that's great. I'm glad." He goes, "No, you don't understand. I'm an insomniac. I haven't slept for more than 3 hours a night in the last 30 years. And he said, "Last night I slept 8 hours. And it's that kind of impact that someone all of a sudden, and, you know, I hooked him up with a hypnotherapist in Chicago, and the guy still goes there to help do his relaxation. But those kinds of major changes, things can really improve your life, you know. I was just with a group of friends, and this guy walked up to me and hugged me, and I hadn't seen him in several years, and I said, "Are you okay?" And he says, "You know, I've never smoked since we did that session." He says, "My lungs have cleared up," and he went on and on with all the positive aspects, and I just hypnotized him and gave him the necessary suggestions and totally forgot about it, but he did, and that was great.
Is there anything hypnosis cannot work on?
Oh, there's a lot of things, yeah. I always tell people, look, do not go to me because you don't want to go to the doctor, because that's just silly. Someone will walk up to me and say, "Can you block pain?" And my answer is yes. "Will you do it?" My answer is no. And the reason is simple, because pain is something telling us, hey, something's not right here. You need to go see a doctor. You don't come to the hypnotist to have him block your pain. Perhaps that pain is something much worse. There's lots of things that hypnosis is not good for, and there are things that doctors will say to you. You could go to a hypnotist, and this will help you. It's pain control is one of them. But I would never do pain control with someone unless they had a doctor that actually said, yes, go ahead and learn the techniques, because the drug's only going to take you so far. But it starts with someone who's trained like that. It always starts with an MD. It does not start with me.
A lot of this is associated with the brain. How do you describe the brain or think of the brain in your profession?
If this giant room that we're in is the unconscious mind, your fingernail is your conscious mind. And people don't really understand that. This massive storehouse, everything that's ever happened to you is in your brain. But you have to have a way to access it, and that's what the critical faculty is. So if you were to teach a young child that your hand is your foot, and you kept saying foot, 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 and showed them the hand, it would take a long time for them to realize that's not a foot, it's a hand, because you're actually establishing certain, you're referencing something in the unconscious mind, and that's all the conscious mind does, is it just works as a reference point. So if you're going to try to teach somebody, whatever it is that you want to teach them, you have to understand that you're using the critical faculty. You're helping them develop that critical faculty, which doesn't actually start until you're around 6 months old. I mean, at 6 months, there's usually a defining moment that starts to actually establish what the conscious mind is. Prior to that, it's all unconscious. So everything you say, everything you do, everything the child smells and tastes, everything, it's all in there. It's just that there's no way to reference back to it, because we don't have any way to connect peanut butter to what, peanut butter tastes like.
Now, why are there things we can remember and then things that hypnosis will make us remember? Things that are tucked away in our brain.
Well, first of all, that's one of those slippery slope questions, because if you are going to a hypnotist because you want to remember something, you have to remember that sometimes your unconscious mind blocks that because it is associated to a trauma. The best example I could give you would be to say the difference between doing in a show where you say, everyone in the audience, you are all kindergartners, okay, versus saying you are all happy and healthy kindergartners. Because if, for instance, someone is hypnotized and is told they're a kindergartner and finds out that they were molested as a kindergartner and their brain blocked that pain out, that's years of future therapy that should not have started at a show. So I don't do that. I always say, you're all happy and healthy kindergartners, and you hate me because I'm the meanest teacher in the school. So I'm directing exactly the reaction that I want them. So they make faces at me, they make funny noises at me, that kind of thing, versus saying you're kindergartners, which could mean that someone at that stage in their life had some negative trauma. Maybe they saw a parent die, whatever. I mean, goodness knows. Those kinds of things are really, really important because your unconscious mind blocks those traumas. Its number one job is to protect you. So if it's blocking a trauma, and something's not right, but you don't know what it is, or you talk to a psychiatrist for a while, he may very well use hypnosis to help you get there, but he knows what to do next. It doesn't belong in a show. It belongs in a therapist's office. And so those are the kinds of things I tell people, those are the huge differences, and that's the way your brain works. Your brain will block those traumas out to keep you from feeling that, the uncomfortableness.
Now, what is the explanation for how somebody is able to block something out like a trauma? Because obviously you don't do it purposely. I think we'd all like to forget traumas if we could, but some people really do totally forget that they have ever happened.
Yeah, it just depends on how your mind interprets it. And truthfully, in children, especially before the critical faculty is well developed, a lot of times it'll turn into other things. And you'd have to go to a psychiatrist or a therapist to actually, ask them that question, because all I know is that it's one of the cautions that I carried with me when I started doing, hypnosis therapy, that don't do it. You need somebody that is like that. If you bring those out, you can get violent tendencies, you can have, trauma that's so extreme that they need to be hospitalized and all kinds of different things like that. But the answer to the question, I think, is simply, every one of us is different, and if something is interpreted as way too painful, we're going to block that out. We see that all the time with PTSD. We see veterans come back, and a loud noise all of a sudden brings back a memory, but it doesn't bring back the whole memory. And it takes years to work through that, and I've got a great deal of respect for anybody who is trying to work through anything like that, because it's simply the unconscious mind keeps saying no, 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 and, you know, you maybe need to know what it is that happens so that you can really resolve that and move on.
For somebody who deals in hypnosis, could you be hypnotized?
Oh, yeah. I self-hypnotize myself every show. If you watch, and most people don't even know I'm doing it, but my head will droop for a second, and if I'm feeling discomfort, the pain goes away. If I feel uncomfortable, the uncomfortableness goes away. When I go out on stage, I feel like a million bucks because I make sure every show I do that. It's no different than if you watch LeBron James when he dribbles the ball before he shoots a foul shot. If you watch, he'll do it exactly the same number of times in exactly the same way. And if the ball doesn't return right to his hands exactly the way it's supposed to, he won't shoot that shot. He'll do that again. And that's because he just learned, and it's called anchoring, and it's used by a lot of professional athletes in a lot of different ways. But, yeah, I mean, I do that for myself every show. And I tell people all the time, you know, I've given you this suggestion that you can use tonight to go to sleep, but you can use it the rest of your life. And that's really, really empowering for a lot of people.
If people want to get in touch with a good hypnotist, how do you know a good hypnotist from a bad hypnotist? Is there a way that we can check on this?
Well, yeah, there are certifications through the NGH, which is the National Guild of Hypnotherapy. And all you need to do is just ask the question, are you certified? A lot of times the NGH will have conventions where they will work with specific therapies and help people, you know, teach people how to actually work with certain things. Almost any hypnotist will do, like, stop smoking and things like that. But there are, I don't know, probably 300 therapies that are available through a hypnotherapist. And a lot of times, if you ask the hypnotherapist a specific question, he'll say, look, give me a week so that he can actually go and research the best way to actually help with, you know, with the situation like that. It's like I tell people, if I were to hypnotize someone who was smoking to say every time you touched a cigarette, you'd feel sick to your stomach, that would only work as long as they didn't want to smoke that cigarette. There has to be more. You know, you can't just learn the one thing. And the same thing is true of all kinds of different things that can be, you know, relationships and, you know, that type of thing. Most of my therapy work I just don't do anymore, just simply because I'm not around, and people that need therapy need to be able to contact the therapist and have a session. I had a guy a few years ago call me and say, I need a session. I said, well, I'm in Las Vegas. You know, if you want to fly out, we'll do a session, but there's not much else I could do. And that's when I really realized most of the stuff I do is like for stop smoking things where once it's done, you can be on your own for a while, you know.
Do you find there are a lot of phonies out there as you travel the world?
Honestly, I don't run into that many people that do hypnosis. Occasionally someone will come up to me and present a business card, and if they do, I always check, first of all, make sure they have the credentials, then I'll recommend them. Because a lot of times people that come to the fair, they come up to me afterwards. They didn't volunteer for the show, but they want to whatever with hypnosis, and they're wondering, will this work, will that work? And I would say, hey, you know what? Check your phone book or, you know, check Google and see if there's any hypnosis therapists in your area. A lot of times there are. You just no one ever bothered to do a Google search to find out. But if one of them comes up to me at a show, at a fair, or wherever, some public show, once I check their credentials, I'll recommend them. Because I know that I know how it really impactful it can be. And generally speaking, it's not particularly expensive.
What is a hypnotist, an audience to a show for a hypnotist, what are they looking for? What's their big question?
Oh, I don't know. Most of the shows, because I use the word comedy, they just want to laugh. They want to get on with it, so to speak. And I always have to remind people, hey, look, these people have to be hypnotized before they'll do the things that you see on my video that they're doing. If they're not hypnotized, it doesn't go. But for the most part, people want to go there and have fun. They want to see their next-door neighbor do something that he or she never did before. They want to watch their girlfriend, you know, do something they never did before, you know, whatever. Once they see that, that's when that astounding moment. And those words are the words that travel around the fairground. I just watched this guy do this thing that there's no way he would have done, but now he's doing it. So mostly they just want to be entertained.
How has internet, Facebook, YouTube, TikTok, and all that changed what you do?
It really, for me, I I publish videos of some of my shows. I use several different agents. Some of the agents refer back to some of the videos that are on my website. But for the most part, it really hasn't changed that much, except it's made it way less expensive to advertise. I used to have to send DVDs out so that people could see my performance and then wait as long as a month before they even got around to watching them. Now, if they are talking to me, I can say, go here. You know, I can email them a couple of links, and they can actually watch a show, which is basically the same demographic as the demographic they want to perform for. So from that point of view, yeah, it's nice. One of the things that always concerns me, and I'll give you my classic example, there's a hypnotist who has put out this comedy show, and the audience laughter is from a Robin Williams comedy show. I mean, I sat there and watched that, and I went, I recognize those people in the front row, and I found, you know, a couple months later, I went, oh my gosh, this guy literally had put in the backdrop of, you know, of this comedy show. I don't know whether he got laughs. All I know is that he got Robin Williams' show and cheated and did it that way, you know.
Now, is there something you have done that just you had to take out of the show because it simply did not get laughs at all?
Mm. Yeah, that's a list.
If it's funny to you, is it going to be funny to them?
That's yes, but that's only because I've been doing it a very long time. So a lot of times I just won't try to do something. You know, the other thing is, a lot of times you'll have people that just are interpreting things in different funny ways. Sometimes I'll do a thing where I say the back of my clothing is ripped away. I don't do that very often because a lot of times I have, 16, 17, 18-year-olds on the stage, and I'm uncomfortable doing that kind of material. But if I'm doing like an all-adult group, I'll do that, and I'll get some really, really funny results. But they're always different. You know, I know what my number one routines are, but my number one routines will sometimes be overshadowed by a really good volunteer. Because the key, really, is do you get that one really good volunteer? Because if you do, everything else flies. So the stuff I've done, tried and true, I've done it, you know, thousands of times, literally. When I introduce a new routine, I work on that routine for a while because it has to do with how it's worded and, you know, that whole process. But really, in the end, what's really funny to one audience isn't funny to another audience, and sometimes you just have to say, okay, we're going to move on, and knowing that the next time that audience may just be cackling over that same routine.
Scott Spears, WWGH Radio, here at the Marion County Fair, 107.1 FM, 51 minutes past the hour, with hypnotist Mike Bishop, who will be performing here at the Marion County Fair. He'll give us the times again before we're done here in the next 10 minutes. But, Mike, if people want to find you who can't get out to the fair today, how do they find you?
Well, the easiest way is just go to my website at hypnomike.com. You can also go to my YouTube channel, which is Mike Bishop Hypnotist. You can see some videos and all that kind of stuff. But my contact information is out there for anybody that wants to get a hold of me. You know, I'd love to talk to you about it, but bring a show in. Every year I do tons and tons of high schools and after proms and project graduations and all those kinds of things. So I'm out there. I've got a presence out there. I don't really do much as far as like a Facebook page and stuff like that, only because, frankly, I'm really, really busy, and I've got probably 14 agents now that are running me all over the place. So it's good to be busy, but I like meeting new people, you know?
Now, when you're here at the fair, we'll give us some times again really quick.
5 o'clock, 7 o'clock, and 9 o'clock, and that's at the Picnic Pavilion.
Now, how long does the show last?
At the fair, I keep the show to around 45 minutes because there's only a certain amount of time that you want to spend at the fair sitting and watching something. Sometimes if I'm doing an evening show and I've got a really roaring along, I'll run the show to an hour. But for the most part, it's hot and the chairs are not really comfortable. So it's, you know, enough is enough. And so I usually keep it around 45, 50 minutes, that kind of thing.
Because we're at the fair, favorite fair food.
Oh, no, you don't. Now, if you're going to come out to the fair and you're not going to get a, what do we think here?
French waffles.
Well, yeah, French waffles are okay. They, you know, that, and that's unusual. And, you know, elephant ears are something that you're not going to be easily able to get. And I always tell people get that. Here's a trivia question for you.
Go ahead.
Of all the sweet treats, what is the healthiest sweet treat at the fair?
The healthiest
sweet treat at the
fair. I bet it's not deep fried.
You were right about that.
I can imagine it's
not
deep fried.
Are you ready?
Give it to me.
Cotton candy.
Cotton candy is
healthy. Cotton candy, and the reason is because cotton candy is about a tablespoon of sugar. That's it. There's nothing in cotton candy but air. You're eating air. So you're eating this sweet treat. There's no fat in it, and all there is a tablespoon of sugar. So, you know, now that you know that, you know. But for me, a funnel cake, you've got to, you know, I mean, when I eat something, I eat a funnel cake. Although I have to tell you, every once in a while, I don't know if they have them out here or not, smoked turkey legs can be awesome, and some of the sausage sandwiches can be amazing, especially if it's a good sausage company that's a local sausage company. I don't know if they have them here, but some of the fairs will have, like, the pork producers or the beef producers will have, every night they'll do sandwiches or whatever. That's absolutely the best. They know exactly what cut of meat and how to cook it.
Can't go wrong there.
Can't go wrong.
Do you want to say hello to a gentleman we just got a message from who's out there listening? Says we sound great this morning. Steve Meadows. Steve, thank you for listening to the program this morning. We appreciate the listeners out there. Being at the fair, that is the biggest. Could you hypnotize me not to be stressed out about the signal coming from the fair, which is the most difficult thing here?
Actually, I would try to hypnotize the transmitter, because you got a better chance of the transmitter being hypnotized than you being not stressed out by the transmitter not working right.
Why do you think, we started out talking about anxiety and things like that in this day and age, but stress in general, people don't stop. People used to stop. They used to go to people's house and visit. There were moments. It doesn't happen anymore. It can't all be because of the phone, can it?
I think that a lot of it has to do with the fact that we have become much more individualized. If you happen to like teddy bears, you can find several different places on Facebook or whatever, or chat rooms, where you talk about teddy bears. If you like purple teddy bears, there's still places that you can go to that have purple teddy bears. If you like purple teddy bears with white faces, I'm guessing that there's probably a Facebook page for people who like purple teddy bears with white faces. At one time, everybody kind of got to share these different ideas. Now, one person on the other side of the planet can match up with something that you really like, and it's just the two of you. And I think the problem is we don't see the other people anymore. We only want to talk to the people that like purple teddy bears with white faces. And I think that what we need to do is we need to remember, hey, these people that disagree with you, they don't dislike you. They just don't think that you're exactly right, and you're not exactly right. The most important thing I tell everybody, you're not right. If you're willing to allow yourself to just be human for a second and know that, hey, you have a political view, you may be wrong. It's okay to have that political view, and it's certainly okay if you find out it's right or if it's wrong. But if you go into those views knowing, hey, I'm wrong 70% of the time. That's our average. That's the human being average over the long term, how many things we're wrong at. 70%. If you look if you want to get in the Baseball Hall of Fame and you have a 300 batting average, you're in. It's exactly the same thing. We miss 70% of the time, 50% almost immediately, and another 20% over time. If we all are just willing to understand that we are built flawed, we're not going to have near as much trouble with one another, because we can look at someone and say, he's wrong, but he might be right. And I'm right, but I might be wrong. And it really will change things.
This is Mike Bishop. You're at the fair, 56 minutes past the hour. Got about 4 minutes left here, Mike. You know, it's interesting. When you do a show like this, obviously we would call it a performance. If you're helping people stop smoking, I don't think that's a performance.
No, definitely.
So what is a hypnotist? How do you classify yourself? What field are you in?
Honestly, I'm in the entertainment field. That's what I am. I'm an entertainer. A hypnotist is someone who has learned the language of the unconscious mind, and it's just really that simple. But it's a lifetime endeavor. One of the greatest stage hypnotists ever was one of the guys who trained me, and his name was Armand McGill. And I watched Armand McGill take a group of complete strangers, sit them up on the stage, and explain to them that in 3 minutes they were all going to be hypnotized, and they all nodded their head, and somehow Ormond had translated or had gotten to them in such a way that they translated what he said as the truth, and they all went under. And I have never seen anyone do what he did as well as he did it. But he just knows exactly the right tone of voice, because the unconscious mind doesn't just respond to what's said. It responds to how it's said, and it responds to all the environment that's around it at that time. And it's pretty amazing. But it's just somebody who knows how to talk to the unconscious mind.
With 2 minutes left here, what is the biggest misconception about a hypnotist?
Again, what I said before is that we have some kind of superpower or some kind of, you know, unusual power. We don't. I just happen to know things that other people can learn, but that's no different than when you talk to your accountant or when you talk to your attorney or when you talk to your doctor. It's just having a certain amount of knowledge that's different and specific knowledge, and for me, it's just understanding how your unconscious mind works.
When we look at this in hindsight and in the future, how long would you like to keep doing this?
You know, I get asked that question because I have guys who will, like, decide, we decided we're going to go out, we're going to do shows, hypnosis shows on the fairground, and they'll call me and say, do you have any advice? And I say, buy fans. And they think I'm joking until they get to the fairgrounds and find out it's hot out here. And, you know, there's all kinds of challenges that you have to learn to overcome. So for me, I don't know. I really enjoy this. I enjoy the people. I enjoy doing what I'm doing. I could leave it at any time, and I don't think I will. I think I probably have at least 5 more years in me just, you know, thinking in terms of, you know, everything that I'm doing. Then maybe I'd move into an environment that's not quite so hot.
You know, a lot of people, with a minute left here, they say, I perform for love, and other people, I perform because I want to get enough money to be able to retire. Is it a performance of love, or is it a lucrative business as well, or both?
Well, you know, that's where we get into the question, how much money do you make? And the answer to that question is, that's none of your business. I have people that ask me those kinds of things all the time. What I say to those people is, if you are living a fulfilled life, you don't need as much money, but I have enough money that I'm comfortable, and I'm really glad about that. I'm not, at this point in my life, I don't need to perform. Okay, I don't need the money. I do it because I need the audience. I need that laughter. I like my audiences. I want to make them laugh, and I want them to have a good time.
Mike Bishop, hypnotist here at the Marion County Fair. Thank you, Mike, for coming on with us.
Thank you, Scott.
You're listening to WWGH Radio 107.1 LP Marion, Ohio, The Talking Place. From legendary comedian Orson Bean singing the Baloney Song.
Two Irishmen and a Hebrew, one went out for recreation, and they took enough provisions along to spend a week's vacation. But they got lost out in the woods, the nights grew dark and lonely, and at last all of their food ran out, except a piece of bologna. Now one of them said as he picked up a knife, there's no use in us carving, for if we do, there won't be enough to keep us all from starving. So I suggest we go to bed, and tomorrow, said Maloney, whoever has the nicest dream wins the piece of bologna. The following morning when they awoke, a quarter after 7, one of them said, I had a dream. I died and went to heaven. St. Peter met me at the gate, riding on a pony. Now I don't think you can beat that dream. I win the bologna. The other one said, I had a dream.